and welcome to Financials Podcast, Future Rich. I am Barbara Ginty and your host and also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I am here today with my guest, Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So tell us a little bit about yourself, age, like married, single, parent, all that, location, all that fun stuff.
Yes. Okay. So I am 25. I'm turning 26 in April, so not too far from now.
Happy early birthday. And so for our listeners, hopefully we're out of quarantine by then, so you can celebrate.
I know. Honestly, I'm not sure if we are going to be. April 11th is my birthday, so we're probably going to be in the middle of it.
You're going to be having a FaceTime party, I think.
Yeah, it's okay. I've accepted it. 26 isn't that big of a year. So yeah, I'm almost 26. I work as a dietitian, and I live in North Carolina. So I live in like the western side of North Carolina, and I work as an outpatient diabetes dietitian. So a lot of what I do is just working with like nutrition counseling all day, every day.
Oh, wow.
Yep. It's a lot of people talking.
Yeah, so you're talking all day to people.
Yeah. So,
and it, does it get repetitive ever? Because if you're doing the same, is it the same type of nutrition counseling?
Yeah, it is. And I think I've gotten, which things have changed drastically right now during the quarantine, which has been really nice because it's giving me kind of like a mental breather. But yeah, it does get repetitive and it can be stressful just because it can be sometimes like really intense appointments or sometimes like urgent medical needs. So that is kind of part of why I wanted to come on the podcast, because I'm eventually, hopefully in the near future, going to be transitioning to a new job. Part of kind of what I've learned in this job is that I want something a little bit more dynamic. So maybe we can get into that later.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
what are you making now as a dietitian?
So I make a little over 60,000.
Okay, great.
And then that my net each month, I get paid monthly, which is kind of a weird structure, but it's 3,000.
I got paid monthly my first job and it was so hard.
It was an adjustment. Like you think it's not going to be that bad. And then you get to day like 25, day 26 and you're like, man, it's been a long time.
Yeah. You're like, this has been a long time since I've gotten a paycheck.
Yeah. So that was definitely an adjustment. I don't know why they chose to do it that way, but my monthly pay is $3,518.
Okay.
And that's like with all of my, you know, my 403B and everything's taken out. So that's my salary. Okay, what else did you ask for? I kind of blanked.
Oh, wait. So we know how much you make. And now are you single, married, you have kids?
Yes. Okay, so I'm single, but I do live with my boyfriend and our dog. So we share rent, we pretty much split everything 50-50.
Okay, perfect. All right, so then let's go into your numbers. So, yes. And actually just a little fun fact, I think if you've listened to the pod, you've noticed I've asked people their monthly numbers. And I think the reason is because I worked for almost 5 years on a monthly paycheck and I got so used to budgeting monthly because everybody's like, oh, well, I'll tell you my net pay. And I'm like, well, what's your monthly? And they're like, I don't do it that way. I do it paid. And I think that's why I'm like always in that habit of saying monthly, because I was I started out learning to budget and everything on a monthly number.
Yeah. I thought about how one day if I have to go to getting paid every other week or twice a month or whatever it is, like that's just going to feel so weird getting paid twice a week.
It actually is such a step up.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the next level.
It's
the same amount of money, but it just feels nicer when you get more checks.
Yes, exactly. More, just feels more consistent, I guess.
Yeah, it just makes sense in your budgeting. So if you mess up, you don't mess up as, you know, if you mess up in a monthly check early on, you have a long way to go.
Yeah, that I've definitely noticed that. Yeah, and all my numbers are monthly, so we're on the same page there.
Yeah, because I realized like into doing this podcast, I was like, oh, I really need to stop doing this monthly thing because nobody's giving me monthly numbers. But I think that's because I, you know, I'm like 21 to 26 when I first started doing my money, I was doing it monthly. Okay, perfect. So you're netting 30, just over 3,500 a month, and then you're splitting your, you have apartment or condo or something with your rent with your boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, which actually land and housing here is so affordable. So we actually have a small 3-bedroom home that we rent, and it is total $1,050 for the month. What? And so we split that. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing.
I know. It's so nice. And so we have like, we're in like a nice neighborhood. It's just crazy how cheap in North Carolina land is. Which is going to really suck if we move one day and I have to like get used to how everyone else lives.
I just left New York City and I must say it is very, especially now that we're like quarantined, I'm so thankful that I'm not in my like 350 square foot apartment.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
I know.
It is nice to be in another city where it's more reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Okay, so rent like is a little over 500 then for you, for your share?
Yeah, basically I pay 550 if you want Perfect. To think about it That's that way. Right. And then my car payment is 300.
Okay.
And I still owe 7,000 left on my car loan.
Okay.
And then as far as like all of my other expenses, so like my phone bill, my car insurance, gas, groceries, my gym membership, which I'm not allowed to use right now, and like water bills, utilities, it comes out to about $950 for all of that per month.
Perfect. That's great. So then you are definitely well under your budget.
Yeah, it is great, which is why, what'd you say?
You're well under your net income, and your net is after your 403b contribution. How much are you putting in there?
Oh my gosh. So I was looking at all of this earlier, like to prepare for the podcast, and I was so sure that I was contributing 4%, and I went to look and it was only 2%. And so that was a huge bummer. And I think that what happened is like when I took this job, it was like one of my first quote unquote real jobs. And I think I just started with the minimum thinking, oh, I'll increase it over time. And I just never came back to it as I've learned so much about, you know, finances. But so that was a super big bummer. So now as of today, I'm contributing 4%.
Good.
Which is such a bummer. God, it's going to take a while to let that go, but
that's okay. So you know what is a good thing to do? So even when you get a raise, it's always a good time to bump it. Because that's if you, and it doesn't always happen for everybody to get a raise yearly, but if you have your annual review, you can remember to do it then. So whenever you get your annual review, typically that's when you would get a cost of living adjustment or potentially a raise.
Right.
And then the other trick I've heard too is like at tax time when you're gonna file your taxes, that's if you're a type of in a role where you don't get raises. Mm-hmm. But I think the annual review is like a good time to do it because almost everybody has an annual review at work.
Right.
And so that's when you go through and change your contribution because it's pretty painless if you bump it up. Like I always say to split it. Like, so if you were to get a raise for 2%, do 1% for today and 1% for tomorrow, tomorrow being the retirement and today meaning your paycheck.
Okay.
But yeah, if you look to increase it, I think 1% a year is a minimum. And then if you get a, you know, a big raise, that's the most painless way to increase it because you're already living on what you're used to making pre-raise, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I did get a 2% raise this year. So that was nice.
Oh, perfect.
So I guess it's been a couple months, but I put it in. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. And so then my company does it a little bit differently. So the way that they, which is really nice, if you contribute 4%, they put in 7%.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So they match it plus 3%.
That's amazing. What's the cap?
What do you mean?
Like what's the max they'll put in for you?
7%.
Seven. Okay, good. So you're going to get the full.
Yeah. So if you put in 4%, they put in 7%. But if you put in 5%, they still put in 7%.
Ah, okay. So perfect. So then you're putting in 4 and they're putting in 7.
Yeah.
That's great. And then now this is another question that you might not know, but if you were to leave to do this new job, is there a vesting schedule on the money they're putting in or do you automatically get to keep the money they contribute?
There is. I was going to ask you about that. So, okay. So in the total, like, 403b account, there's $9,895, but $7,730 is vested. right now.
Okay. And then how long for the other 2,000 and change to vest?
So I think I have to work there for 3 years in order to get all of what they're putting in. And I've only worked there for 2 years.
Okay. And when is your, when's your 3 year anniversary next year?
Mm-hmm. In February 2021.
Oh yeah. Okay. So it's definitely a year out. Okay. So if you were, if you take this other job, you're going to lose about 2,000 in the.
Yeah. That's what it's going to look like.
Yeah. Cause you'll get, you basically get to keep probably like 60 something percent of it. And then the rest. Okay. Well, that's okay. That's just something to take into consideration with the benefits and the pay for the next job.
Right.
But yeah, but that's what the vesting schedule means. So vesting schedule is just the percentage that you get to keep and like at what dates to, for your service with that company.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. So is it like, if I had been putting in 4%, would that be, would that number be like double what it is right now, basically?
Well, the company match, it was the same the entire time, so it wouldn't be double. So don't feel that bad. So it would only be like 2% more, right? Because your company, it's not like your company matches you no matter what. They just don't put in more than 7. Is that right?
I think, right. They don't put in more than 7. Yes.
So it would definitely be higher, but it, I don't think it would be 50% higher.
Okay. That's good to know.
So, and you know, the good thing is, the good thing is now, because you're going to be 26, that you're, you'll have a habit of doing this now at your annual review.
Right.
And more mindful of it, because it's way worse to like be 55 and be like, oh shoot.
Right. Yeah. My parents right now.
Yeah. You hear that and see that all the time where people were like, I was in it and I, or they were in it and they didn't pick, like they didn't really do their investments the right way, or they were in cash inside of it. So I see worse things. So don't beat yourself up over it. You're still young enough where we can get the money in there and we can get good habits where you're increasing it on a regular basis. So yeah, cool. Don't beat yourself up.
Yeah. And like you were telling the last student loan podcast you did, you were telling her that if she had like 75 grand by the time she was 30, it would basically quadruple by the time she was 70. So that, just like hearing those numbers, I think really was eye-opening for me. And when I looked at my 403b account, I was like, whoa. Like, I mean, I guess if I contribute 10,000 a year for the next 5 years, like I'll be pretty close.
Yeah, you'll be pretty, yeah, and if the market goes up, absolutely. That's a perfect way to look at it.
Okay, cool.
And technically, I think they say you're supposed to have 1 year, like 1 year's of salary saved. So yours might be 60. But if you can, but I would shoot for 75. It's a great number if you get in there for what you're making by 30. And yeah, the reason I always try and encourage people to get in the work plans and stay in them, like I know even though now the market's down and it's very scary, you, because you have those doubles, right? The goal is to how many times can you get your money to double? And when you're in your 20s, you have an extra double versus someone starting in their 30s, which can make the difference between like 600,000 or 1.2 million.
That's such a big difference.
It's a huge difference. And like, granted, none of that's guaranteed. It's just if your money is earning 7.2% compounding of interest. But I mean, the stock market, you can definitely make money long term in it. And so the earlier you're in it, you don't need to have as much money. You just need that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad you listened to that one, because I was trying to get to stress why it was important. I was like, why, how do I make this a more visual thing? And I was like, okay, if I give you the big numbers, that's when it's more attractive versus being like, yeah, put $1,000 in. It's like, oh, well, I'm never going to see that again. It's like, well, no, it can make all the difference for your retirement.
Right. And people, I mean, my dad is an accountant, so he will tell me stuff like this all the time, but it's like, in, until you like put a number to it and you set a goal and you can see how that will change over time. It's super like hard to conceptualize being a millionaire at 70 when you're 25, you know? Yeah. So it's like, you know, like that's just like, okay, I'm putting like 4% away. It's going to like magically multiply and I'm going to have all this money one day, but it's hard to fathom that. And so it's just like, I don't know. It's just never felt super like relatable or attainable until I heard that example.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that it worked, because my goal is that everybody can retire and enjoy it, right? Yes. You don't want to be retired and like a greeter at Walmart.
No, I don't want that. Okay. Another question I had about that is like when I was putting, making sure it was 4%, today, it asked, you know, you can put in, like, you can divide up the percent to be before versus after tax. I did it all before tax. That's just something that I feel like I've heard a lot. What do you typically say?
So there's no real right or wrong. And some people say that if you're young, you should only do Roth. And then other people argue for the pre-tax. This is what I think. Personal finance is a very personal topic, obviously, and it's not one size fits all, right? So like what fits you isn't going to necessarily fit Natasha or the next guest. So if you can afford to do Roth, Roth is one of my favorite vehicles. You're comfortable with where your housing cost is low. All of your costs are low, right? You mean you have an excess of $1,700 a month. There's no right or wrong, put it that way. The pre-tax is going to give you a tax break, meaning it's going to lower your taxable income, which is great, right? Who doesn't not want to pay less tax? And then you'll go and pay it in the future when you go to retire. Right. Now, the Roth, the after-tax, if you put in after-tax, you get no tax break. So if you're putting in, we're doing 4%, so you're doing $2,400 a year, that $2,400 comes after they go through all the payroll taxes, right? After you pay all your taxes.
Right.
Versus $2,400 pre-tax, you don't miss $2,400 in your pay, right? Your pay isn't because you're borrowing the tax money to essentially put in the market. So for me, I have tended to, if you have excess money and, you know, are able to hit your other financial goals, then maybe I lean towards Roth. Typically, when people are trying to pay off student loans and save for a house and have multiple financial goals they're trying to achieve, which can be overwhelming, I tend to lean more towards the pre-tax because it gets you the tax break and gives us more money in your paycheck to tackle other goals so that we're running like three goals at a time, right? We're doing retirement, we're paying off loans, we're saving for a house or a wedding, right? Because when you're young, I feel like there's so many goals that you're trying to tackle. It can be overwhelming how to divvy up the money.
Right.
But that being said, there isn't a right or wrong answer with it. It's just about where are you with your financial goals and do you have enough money to put in each of the buckets?
Okay. So kind of like, I guess what I'm kind of thinking based on that is like maybe after my loans are paid off, then to like increase an extra percent in Roth or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because then you're doing both. I think that's perfect. And the other way you can also do it is you can also do a Roth IRA outside of work too.
Okay.
So you could always take advantage of your pre-tax options in work, your payroll plan with the match, because your match is typically going to be pre-tax, right?
Right.
The companies typically match in the pre-tax option. So then that way your workplace plan is going to be all pre-tax and then you keep your Roth dollars as your own account that you manage outside. That's another way to do it.
Okay, cool.
And then you can do that like once a year at the end of the year. You can see how much you've saved throughout the year, made sure you've gotten rid of the student loans or you've tackled those and you have everything kind of squared away. And then you can go and make a Roth contribution in addition to what you're doing.
Okay, that makes sense. I feel good about that.
Yeah, that's the tricky part because I love the Roth IRA. It's like my favorite vehicle. But I also know it's important to get student loans paid off and to save for a house and a wedding. You know, there's all these other things that you want to do. So we try and make the dollars stretch as far as possible. And then I think the key is knowing that the Roth, what the value is for the Roth. And if you do it on your own and then maybe down the road when some of the other goals are more tackled, then maybe you target the Roth more or you do Roth conversions. There's like a lot of ways to do it.
Okay. Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great.
Now, what's going on with your student loans?
Okay, so I actually am so proud of how much I've paid them off because I can't believe it. I just got down to the single digits. I just paid.
That's incredible.
So being a dietitian is awesome, but very frustrating because you're required to do this internship where you pay for the internship. So you pay for tuition, but then you are not paid as an intern. So you're paying for housing for a year and everything. So you really accrue a lot of debt just in this one year, like knocking out this internship.
Oh, no.
I know. So somehow I went through. So my total debt when I graduated 3 years ago was $37,000. And then last month I just paid my last payment that I made a payment on. It was
$9,000.
Wow. Yeah. So
that's incredible.
I know. So, I mean, I'm super proud of like how much I've paid and I'm actually super surprised I have been able to pay that much on it, in a couple of years. But so now that it's like $9,000, I guess I'm just kind of like Should I just like, you know, make bigger chunks and like really pay that off? But then I was like kind of having a lot of those thoughts leading up to everything that was going on with the economy. And now I'm like, oh my God, should I just like not pay anything on this student loan and hold on to that extra like 17, you know, hundred that I'm making every month? While I at least like have a secure paycheck.
Yeah. So how are you doing? Do you have an emergency fund?
Yeah. So I have 10,000 in an emergency fund that I never touch. I just kind of keep it in my savings. Basically anything extra I do or the loan payments that I make are just from like the extra net income.
Perfect. Okay. So what I would do, so tell me about the new job, because I want to see if I think either, I think either these are going to, your current job or your new job are going to be affected by what's happening in the economy.
Right. Okay. So this new job, it's also a dietitian position, but it's working for a startup company. Doing something similar to what I'm doing now, but I think it's just going to be on like a very different level. So the company, is basically working with diabetes technology. And so I'll be working remotely and then working with people who buy that piece of technology and just working through any issues that they may have, like kind of lifestyle changes. But then from talking to them, and I've been talking to them for a few months, it seems like the position is going to kind of morph and change, and it's going to move from being like, quote unquote, just a dietitian into more of a management leadership role within the startup company, because it's a pretty small company right now.
So how is it? Because sometimes with startups, because I've worked with people who are in the startup space, they can be unstable, not all, but they can be in terms of like needing funding to continue and sort of. So what kind of startup is it? Is it like established?
So they are established and they do have funding. Right now they have 5 employees, including like the CEO and like the top level people. So there's 5 total people that are currently working for them. So they are a pretty new company. There is like a bit of a risk that would be associated with working for them, especially with everything going on in the market right now. But with that said, like I already work in the industry and I already work with the technology, like in the clinic that they're selling. So I feel pretty comfortable with like that.
What they're doing.
Yeah. And I really don't think it's going away anytime soon. Like I think they may take a bit of a hit with everything going on with the coronavirus, but I do think that if they can ride it out, they will bounce back and eventually like really continue to climb.
And then what is the plan for starting with them and what's the salary and benefits? Let's do that.
Yeah. So I haven't actually received an official job offer yet. So it's still kind of in the works. And I actually just had my final interview recently, maybe in the last week or two. And they did say that they're going to, they're basically doing a hiring freeze for a month or two.
Yeah.
And then they're going to reevaluate. So that's a super big bummer because they were saying that they were going to offer the job before the end of March.
So that's a big,
So we got pushed out a couple months.
So here's what I would do. I think that going into a start, you have a really solid emergency fund. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with where you have your 401k, especially with the 403b, sorry, not 401k, 403b is for a nonprofit. So what I would do is maybe, I would love to say like go full force on the student loans. I would maybe bulk up the emergency fund.
Okay.
If you do decide to go and take this opportunity, which sounds like it's a great opportunity, I think you just need to have a bit more of a cushion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just because it's a small startup and a lot of things can go wrong. A lot of things can go right, but also a lot of things can go wrong, more so than like an established company or nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So I'm torn about how much you should do. So you're paying how much towards your student loan?
I've been paying $1,000. But I mean, I know that right now with the market, all federal loans are like deferring payment or something at no penalty. So I was like, I don't know, maybe should I do that for a couple months and just kind of like let it hang out or pay the interest?
Well, so they're deferring. So you can apply to have the interest deferred, but then you could still make a principal only payment and just do that. And then that'll tackle the principal more. So that's what I would do. Okay, so I would still make a payment. I maybe not do $1,000, maybe do $500 into savings and $500 on the loans.
Okay.
But make it a principal only payment.
Okay, that's good. Interspersed. I'm writing that down. Yeah, I think that would make me feel more comfortable too. And since I am working from home right now, I did reach out to the startup company. So actually a couple months ago, they had offered me a part-time job to go ahead and get started. And I actually turned it down and told them I wanted to wait for the full-time offer because at the time it was just a really hectic time at work, and they wanted me to work at least 10 hours a week. And so I just felt like I wouldn't have been able to give them my best foot forward doing that, which is super ironic because now I'm like, dang it, I wish I had done that. So I sent them home. Oh my God, I have all the time in the world to reach out and be with this company. But I didn't want to do that indefinitely. I didn't want them to offer me a part-time and then never bring me on full-time. You know? So I was like, I don't know. I just feel like it'll be more straightforward to wait. So then of course all this stuff happened. So then I reached out after the final interview that we recently had. I just told her that I would be super interested in the part-time offer now, and I'd have a lot more time since I am in this situation and blah, blah, blah. So she said she would get back to me and that they were open to it. So I'm kind of waiting to see if that would happen. I think that might make me feel a little bit better, getting my foot in the door and also making a little bit more money in the meantime.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what I was going to say is, here's what I'm thinking. You're going to get your student loans paid off probably no matter what in 12 months, probably less. So then what I would do going forward, so your salary should be comparable to what you're making. And you can maybe even ask for a little bit more because I doubt they're going to have the benefits that you currently have. I don't think they're going to offer a 100% match. They might offer you stock, which will be valuable if they do well.
Yeah, they did say they have an equity, they'll offer equity.
Equity in the company. So that will be valuable. I really doubt they'll have a 401k. They're probably just not going to have the resources for that. Okay. So I would take a good look at what they're offering benefit-wise, because the 7% match on your 403b is really great. So if you're not going to have that, I would try and get your salary a little bit higher, because then that way I would use the difference in pay to do a Roth, if that makes sense. So you can do that outside the company, because they might not even have a workplace plan. It's possible they don't offer any retirement. So I would definitely find out what they're offering for retirement, and then be prepared to try and negotiate you a little bit higher. Because right now your company, your nonprofit is putting in $4,200 a year for you in the retirement benefit.
Would you just tell them that? Would you just tell them hey, listen, this is how much I get through my current benefits. That's why I'm requesting.
And you could just say it's a little bit more high risk, right? Because my job is really stable and they've been around for X number of years or whatever. And you could say that your total comp, because your 403b is considered your compensation, is at whatever they cover for healthcare, plus you have that if you have any other benefits, you're really closer to 65, right?
Right.
So make sure you negotiate yourself up, because you want to make sure that we're even though you don't have to take it out of your paycheck to do the contribution, you're still getting that into your workplace plan. And so if you're not going to have that workplace plan, I want to make sure you money to make the same kind of dollar contributions, even if it's not true.
No, that's good information. Yeah. Job negotiations are so scary, but they get there.
So the good news is you are, I always like to say, the catbird seat, you have a job where you're well paid, right? So you're not in a position where, and I see this happen a lot, unfortunately, people, if you lose your job and then you're looking for a job, it's a lot harder to negotiate because you need the money. And so right now you want the job, but you don't need the job.
Right. Yeah.
And most likely most employers, I think, are expecting a negotiation.
Right. So especially a startup.
So most of the time they're not going to say, oh, well, we're done talking to you. That was ridiculous. Asking for comparable wages for what you're making in the industry to do a similar role, but at a little bit more of a high risk company, I don't think is outlandish for you to go in and say, I want $67,000.
Right. No, that's so good to hear. And I feel like people tell me that all the time. When you are made an offer, you're expected to negotiate. So when you don't negotiate, it's kind of off script. It's you're expected to.
Yeah, you're totally expected to. Not that it's the same as the housing market, but what they put the house up on the market for isn't what they think they're going to, they hope they get it, but they know that people are going to come in with offers that are less than that, right?
Right. That's a good
idea. So when they give you an offer, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. Because then what I would want to see if you took the job and there's, I'm just going to say there's no retirement account, then I would want to see you doing, you know, like a $6,000 Roth IRA contribution on your own.
Yeah. Like max it out.
Yeah. Max it out.
Okay.
And then you'll have a bucket of money that's pre-tax, and then you can start funding the Roth. Hopefully they have something at work. And then you can do the strategy where you're doing the pre-tax at work and then the Roth on your own, because once you get those loans paid off, you'll be able to do both.
Right. That'd be so nice.
Yeah. And then you'll have checked all the boxes, right? You'll be doing retirement at work, retirement on your own. You'll have the emergency fund. You'll have your student loans paid off. I mean, it's going to be great.
Yeah. It's going to be so good.
So that's awesome. Well, do you have any other questions for me?
Oh, man. I think that was it, actually. I think we just went through pretty much all of it. I think the biggest thing was just like the like navigating the transition and just, I guess since it is such like a different market working for a startup, you never know. Like, it's just different. It's hard to kind of feel them out as far as what they're expecting you to be paid or, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the good thing is you're going into a similar role, so you know what dietitians make, which is good, and you know the work that you do, and you know their technology because you have experience with it. So I think it makes it easier to negotiate because there's more known variables than unknown.
Yeah, that's such a good point. That's so good.
So you can just be like, this is what, you know, a dietitian makes, this is the, you know, and you have experience, and I would imagine they'd be looking for someone with experience. So just make sure you don't sell. I think it's important to advocate for yourself and not sell yourself short. And an easy way to start is you can just, most people, my sister like was always like, Barbara, you're so aggressive. Not everyone's aggressive. But I think you usually get the biggest jumps when you change jobs, and startups don't always pay as well because they say they're going to give you equity. So I would start with something above what your compensation is now, knowing they're probably going to try and get you down would be my advice.
Yeah, you know, they have already told me that that it is like that I should kind of expect maybe a little bit less than what I currently make because it is a startup. So, I mean, that doesn't make me super nervous, but then, so it was kind of interesting because on the call, one of the guys was like, you should expect to be paid a little bit less, but with equity. And then the other dietitian was like, but this is all negotiable. She like jumped right in and was like, but it's negotiable.
So it's like, it's all negotiable. So just remember, you're going to be a value add. You know what you're providing to them. So you really want to know what your value is and be very clear about why they should pay. Because if you're good at what you're doing, they're going to make more money.
Right.
Right. Sales will be better. The product, everything will go smoother. So they will make money. You will help them produce revenue. So if anything, I think you should go in near where you're making, but move your compensation up, add up all the benefits you get at your current job and monetize those and add that into your compensation. So you get the match. You should absolutely add that. Your salary isn't 60, it's 64,200 plus the health insurance. And you need to ask them for what they're offering on those so that you can make an equal valuation.
Right. That's good. That's good to know.
And you could also, and it's fully remote.
It is, yeah.
So the nice thing with that is you won't be spending as much on gas and it won't be beating up your car as much. But don't tell them that. I'm telling you.
I know. Or like going out to lunch, you know, like there's so many little things that you spend money on because you go to work.
Yeah, like wanting to look nice and buy clothes.
Yeah, I'm not going to need to look nice. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm, like, so tired of my sweatpants. I've been wearing sweatpants for, like, 3 weeks.
I think everyone in quarantine is feeling that right now.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't wait to wear jeans again. I hope they still fit.
I know.
But, yeah, so that would be my advice. I would definitely make sure – I think this is a big opportunity for you, so make sure you advocate for yourself. And then – but that would be the plan. I would tone down the student loan payments a little bit to bulk up the emergency fund just given the environment we're in. But make sure what you do pay is a principal-only payment since you can defer the regular payments given what the government just came out with. And then once you get the loans paid off, I would do the Roth outside of work. And then ideally – with this job or the next job, you have some sort of work retirement plan and do that as the pre-tax option.
Okay. Yep. What do you think about, like, since it's a startup company, but I would technically be an employee, but I'm remote, would you ask them to like pay for a laptop or like pay for supplies and stuff like that?
Yeah. I think they should absolutely provide you with a laptop if you're going to be a work from home employee. I just had to get a laptop for the woman who works for me.
For quarantine.
Yeah, for quarantine. So yeah, I don't provide a cell phone. I kind of just, you know, most of the work is done on the laptop. So I kind of figured if you use your cell phone, you use your cell phone because the laptop can be hooked into a phone system. But yeah, I think that's standard.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. And remember, it's a negotiation. Don't be afraid to ask, because there's nothing wrong with saying, and I would go in with, I would assume they would, if you're going to work from home, they're going to give you a computer. That would be my assumption.
Yeah, I would hope so.
They can't assume you have a laptop available. I mean, you could just be on a tablet and that wouldn't be good for today.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. Well, it was great having you on, Jennifer.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And for all of our lovely listeners, you can follow us on Instagram. And we had a little fun takeover today, so hopefully you're watching. Taylor took over our Instagram. And we are working on releasing our second class, which is going to be free for the quarantine. So you should definitely check that out. It's about student loans. We should be releasing it in the next week or so. And as always, you can check that out at www.planancial.com.